Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is November 29th, 2013, and this is episode 42A. Gotta catch 'em all, a GameBuoy spotlight on Pokemon. And actually, this week we are going to do something a little different. I am taking off my tricorn for the day, and Slagkick will be hosting the show this week. So let's try that again, once more, with feeling.
Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, First Mate Slagkick, and with me, as always, is Captain Spike.
Drink up, me hearties, yo-ho!
Today is November 29th, 2013. And this is episode 42A, Gotta Catch 'Em All, a GameBuoy spotlight on Pokemon. Welcome back once again, lovely listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
Now, with last month's release of Pokemon X and Y, we thought it'd be a great time to take a look at this jewel in Nintendo's crown of successful gaming franchises. As per the usual with these larger discussion episodes, we're going to split it up into two parts. So we'll be recording the second part tomorrow, and please look forward to it. Until then, please enjoy a hearty serving of our usual follow-ups and news bits. In the interest of your time and our own, let's get this party started. So our first follow-up comes from Silicon Era about Game Center CX3, Areno in District 3. And there's a couple of cool news items about this that have popped up over the past couple weeks. The first one that I want to talk about, it kind of just details the story of it. I know, LOL story in a game center.
And we have actually talked about this in previous episodes.
Right. So we're going to link you to this article on Silicon Era, which you can find at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
For those of you who don't know, in Game Center CX Areno in District 3, you'll be playing a young Areno-san. And, you know, playing classic games as always. So there's some really cute screenshots available and some details about the game. And there's also been some screenshots and information about some of the other games that have popped up. One of those is Negima Kingdom, which is a little adventure RPG sort of thing inspired by Crystalis, which of course is the SNK gem.
I'm really looking forward to this because I'm, you know, obviously a big fan of Crystalis.
Yeah, I remember playing it on Game Boy Color, I think there was a port of.
I believe yeah. There was, yeah.
So it looks really cute. There is a shooter called Zoliate. It's basically kind of a response to the Ikaruga sort of, you know, craziness that we've seen become the trend in shooters over the past couple years or so. And instead, you're just going to have, like, giant lasers coming out of a little spaceship. And it's, you know, just meant to be kind of more fun and blowing stuff up. So it looks cute.
And just to be clear, this is another one of the minigames in, yes, Game Center CX3. Excellent. Yeah, it looks really great. You know, it looks like it's sort of inspired by the early, like, TurboGrafx-16 era of shooters. I'm really looking forward to this.
Indeed. And there's going to be, like, cute little things in the, I guess you could say, overworld of the game. Like, candy stores will change to arcade centers, and there's going to be, like, a little figure shop with, like, Gundam figures that'll pop up, so that's cute.
This is cool to me because it seems like an expansion of some of the ideas that they did in the earlier Game Center games, where, you know, you could collect issues of, like, off-brand Famitsu magazines to read about, like, the fake games in the game.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so this, it just seems like a step further of that sort of meta world around the game, and I really like this idea. I'm really looking forward to this one.
Indeed. Would you like to take this next one, or shall I just keep going through?
Well, you know, I was really excited when the news first hit of this. I sort of was screaming and shouting to basically everyone I know. In Lightning Returns Final Fantasy XIII, Lightning is going to have a costume based on the character Locke Cole from Final Fantasy VI.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is obviously something that I'm super excited about. And I'm already somewhat excited about Lightning Returns, despite the lukewarm reception it's seeing over in Japan right now. But when I see this sort of fan service and, you know, a costume like this, it's very easy to get someone like me really very excited about this.
Yeah. And speaking of Lightning Returns, as kind of is the trend these days, the Japanese voices will be available as DLC in North America. And from what I understand, yes, it will be free for the first 2 weeks, and then afterwards it'll be paid DLC.
You know, I think that this is a really super good idea for Square Enix. You know, they get a lot of flack. There's always people who are asking why they can't have their original Japanese voices in these voiced RPGs. And I think this is a great way to sort of service the people that want their English dubs and the people that want their Japanese languages, while also sort of working as like a sort of incentive for early day one purchasers, since it will be free to download initially, and then after a 2 week period become paid DLC. If you're interested in having the Japanese language pack, obviously you're going to want to pick it up day one.
Right. And the thing that's notable about this is that they gave the Japanese voices separate lip syncing. So, you know, they put a lot of effort.
Square Enix, actually, they do that for most of their
games.
Oh,
do they?
They do regional lip syncing. That's part of why a lot of these HD Square Enix games have such a lengthy time bringing them over, because they do new animations for, you know, regions' voices.
Right. And speaking of Lightning Returns and costumes, there is also a Moogle costume. It looks kind of ridiculous, but it's also kind of amazing.
Yeah. And also, if you're in Japan, they put up a demo for Final Fantasy XIII Lightning Returns. And if you have a Japanese PSN account, you can obviously also download that from the Japanese PSN store.
Right. So, in other Final Fantasy news, seems like there's always a lot of Square Enix things to talk about. A while back, we talked about the Final Fantasy XI, Final Fantasy XIV, and Dragon Quest X crossover. Square Enix has released more details about that. I'm not going to get too much into the in-game details unless you feel it pertinent.
We actually talked about all of the in-game details except for the dates. So if the dates are here, then that's something that that would be new for us to cover.
Yes, December 11th will be for Final Fantasy XI. And it looks like Dragon Quest X is between mid-January and mid-February, and the crossovers for 14 will be in January to early February.
Cool.
And in yet even more Final Fantasy news, Final Fantasy IV The After Years is now out on iOS and Android in full 3D.
I'm officially filing a petition to become Final Fantasy Buoy.
Final Fantasy Buoy.
Final Fantasy Buoy. Please look forward to it.
So, you know, if you are looking to play The After Years, this is a good opportunity to.
Certainly, I've seen a lot of backlash on the internet about Square Enix taking the time to port Final Fantasy IV The After to iOS and Android. You know, certainly in full 3D using the game engine from the 3D DS remakes of the Final Fantasy games.
Right.
And we've talked about this here on the air, so I don't want to sort of tarry on it too long, but it's just, I think that The After is a good epilogue to Final Fantasy IV. I think it's worthwhile. I'm not bothered by how much it borrows from Final Fantasy IV, because, you know, it's a sequel. That's what they do.
Right.
And I think it's cool. I think it's cute. It retails on the Google Play Store and iTunes for $15.99. And if nothing else, maybe wait for the next time it's on sale, if that's too rich for your blood. But I think this is going to be a cool experience. I haven't checked it out yet because I have, you know, holiday purchasing to do for people, but I'm really looking forward to when I can sit down and sort of play through this, because I liked The After a lot.
Excellent. In other RPG news, but not Final Fantasy, East Memories of Celcida is now out for the Vita, so if you are into that, we highly recommend you pick it up. You know, it's good to have something for Vita to actually play. And, you know, Exceed always does a good job localizing these treasures. So if you are one of the people who picked up a Vita, you know, there's been a lot of price drops, and you're an East fan or just an RPG fan in general, this might be something that's right up your alley. In other news that's not East, but is very RPG-ish, Namco Bandai has opened a teaser site for the next Tales of game.
Excellent. And, you know, this is supposed to be the next mainline game, or as Hideo Baba typically refers to them, it is a quote-unquote mothership title.
Ah!
Love Silicon it. Era pontificates this that this might be related to the recently filed trademarks in the U.S. and Europe for Tales of Zestria.
Interesting. It sounds zesty.
Ooh, it does.
Puzzle & Dragons Z is going to have a full world to explore. There is a new trailer, I think it's newish, trailer up on Silicon Era, so go check it out. It looks great. I mean, you know, I love Puzzle & Dragons, and I'm really excited to see it as more of an RPG than, you know, just the kind of puzzle-y elements that you see in the smartphone version.
While I would prefer it without the RPG elements, I will still be all in on this when it comes out in North America, which, of course, as we discussed a few weeks ago, is a thing that is happening. We just don't have any information
right.
on it.
Hopefully sooner rather than later. And, I loved the original Puzzle Quest, so that's, I think, why I'm excited about this, because it seems like it's going to be very similar to that. We finally have some screenshots available for the Neptunia spinoff, Planet Destroyer Black Heart. So, I'm sorry, the full title is actually Hyper Goddess Creed Noir, Planet Destroyer Black Heart. And, you know, this is set in the land of Lay Station, which is in the world of game industry. And it just looks really cute. And so that's going to be out on May 29th, 2014 for the Vita. And as we hear more about it, and as it gets closer to release, hopefully we'll be hearing more.
Yeah, this is definitely one that we'll be talking a lot about. You know, Sting is making this game. I don't know if Sting has made all of these games. I don't think they have. But Sting is, you know, behind some games that you're probably familiar with, like Yegdra Union, Riviera. They've done some really crazy, super experimental JRPGs over the years. And I sort of can't help but wonder what kind of crazy battle system they might cook up for Planet Destroyer Blackheart. So I'll definitely have my eyes open on this one. If you're a fan of the Sting games, obviously, you know, back on Game Boy Advance and PSP mostly, I would definitely recommend you keep your eyes out for this one.
Excellent. We've got some new screenshots from Kirby Triple Deluxe, and one of the new powers will be Rhino Beetle Kirby. It looks silly and cute and awesome, as Kirby usually does. So, you know, we just talked about that last week, I believe, in our news, so we'll be looking forward to that in January 11th, for the 3DS. Got some new information on Geist Crusher. You're going to be collecting upgrades, Mega Man style, from bosses. So that sounds like something that's definitely up our alley.
And, you know, I have to say, I know that this is being run as, like, new information from the trailers, but I feel like we've talked about that here on the show before. Like, I feel like this was something that was discussed in, like, Famitsu or something in, like, October. But I did see a lot of the Japan-focused sites talking about it this last week.
Seems
or
there's
two,
been
so.
Like a lot of like cyclical news that we're like, oh, we've talked about this before. Shovel Knight is going to be supporting Miiverse and Street Pass on Wii U and 3DS. Wii U.
Did you just say Weed U?
No, I said Weed U.
Oh,
Weed U. Wii
U. Is that
3DS.
A pot home delivery service? Like what?
No. And so that'll be really cool. So we will keep bringing you Shovel Knight news.
Yeah, we sure will. I backed this on Kickstarter. I'm really looking forward to this game.
Me too. One Piece Romance Dawn has a release date for North America. That will be February 11th, 2014 on the 3DS. So for all you pirate fans.
And you know, something interesting about this is that it's getting a eShop release as well as a retail release. There was some discussion back when it was first confirmed for that it was going to see release at all, that it might have been a digital-only release, but this does not appear to have been the case. And, in fact, the retail edition is going to have a limited edition holographic foil cover that will be sold exclusively via GameStop stores, Club Namco, and EB Games. Presumably EB Games for people up in Canada or
whatever. We talked a few weeks ago about the Dragon Quest smartphone in Japan. That's going to be getting a release date of December 7th. Not much else to say about that, but just for the sake of following up.
What a magical day.
Indeed. So, you know, Docomo is going to be putting that out with Sharp and Square Enix, so...
In the Docomo.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, well, how could I not?
Last time we talked about the PlayStation exclusive content for Metal Gear... I promise that was not supposed to be English.
Oh!
Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes. And now we have word that there will be Xbox-exclusive content. We don't know what that content's going to look like yet, but we will see. So please look forward to it. Typing of the Dead, Overkill has a new DLC pack that has Shakespeare-themed typing. There's also an update that's available for free where you can do a two-player co-op, a multiplayer story mode.
That's awesome. You know, I'm a big fan of House of the Dead Overkill. I'm a huge fan of the Typing of the Dead series. I'm a big fan of Shakespeare.
We should download Shakespeare of the Dead and probably play this after Game Boy.
Yeah, like every step of this just sounds boss as hell. I'm super stoked.
And if those are available now, $2.99 for the Shakespeare of the Dead DLC. The update is free for everyone.
Woohoo!
And now we're going to go into our fighting follow-ups. The next few follow-ups are all about fighting games. JoJo's Bizarre... Whoa.
I was doing a sound effect for fighting games. Keep
on. No, I know. I thought you were going to hit me, though.
Oh, goodness. I'd never.
There is a update coming to JoJo's Bizarre Adventure All-Star Battle. And actually, I say coming, it is already out. That was out yesterday. So, you know, by the time this game is released in the West... It'll probably be implemented in the retail version of the game. But if you are a listener who's in Japan or imported, you know, that will be available to you right now.
Excellent.
It just does, it has a few tweaks like the heart heat gauge and the energy stuff. I'm not too familiar, honestly, with these JoJo fighting games, so...
Well, this is like the first of this series, so...
Oh, really? I thought there had been other JoJo fighters.
Capcom had a JoJo fighting game series, and, you know, certainly a lot of people, I think, make a mental connection between that series and this new game. But strictly speaking, this is the start of a new series. And so some of these game mechanics, I think, are unique to this game.
Excellent.
I'm really, really excited for this game to come here, though. I love the JoJo series, and I cannot wait. I cannot wait to see this game release here.
Indeed. Speaking of Capcom, they have shared some more detailed looks at four of the new characters in Ultra Street Fighter 4 and show you their moves, as Captain Falcon would say. Of course, those are... Those are Rolento, Elena, Hugo, and our Lady Boy Poison. So, this is over at Silicon Era. They did about a, you know, 30 to 45-ish second video for each, so... Just to give you a taste of what to look forward to.
In other fighting game news, we also have confirmation that the new Dead or Alive 5 Ultimate character, Maria Rose, this was, of course, the gothy loli that we talked about last week, will, down the line, be coming to consoles. You know, this character, of course, is making her debut in Dead or Alive 5 Ultimate in the arcade, but during a recent location test, website 4Gamer caught up with director Yohei Shimburi and asked if Murray Rose was coming to the console version, and Shimburi-san confirmed that they will have an update down the line to allow everyone who has Dead or Alive 5 Ultimate, be it the full console version or the Core Fighters Pack, which was the free-to-play version that we've discussed here on the air a bit. Everyone will have access to Murray Rose if they want her.
And not only that, but she will likely see a Western release. Facebook page for Dead or Alive said that, you know, talked a little bit about Marie Rose and said, oh, we haven't forgot about our overseas fighters. So keep that in mind. In other Dead or Alive 5 Ultimate follow-up news, there will be everyday clothes available as 200 yen DLC.
I just want to make a quick note. Dead or Alive 5 Ultimate for consoles is available in the U.S.
It's arcade. Yeah, sorry.
I knew what you meant, but it occurred to me that we should clarify for our listeners.
So, yes, there is everyday clothes, casual clothing options for Ayane, Hitomi, Mila, Momiji, Hayate, Elliot, Akira, Sarah, Pai, and Jackie.
And can I just point out, half of those are Virtua Fighter cameo characters? Like, why are you doing DLC costumes for them, dog?
In news that is not Dead or Alive 5 Ultimate, Eddie will be returning to Guilty Gear and Guilty Gear Xrd Sign.
And it's worth mentioning that Eddie will be returning to the Zato 1 designation.
Oh, hey.
You know, for those of you who follow the Guilty Gear lore, you'll know that Zato 1 is the name of the human body of Eddie, and Eddie is the shadow, almost like the symbiote, you know, because obviously this character seems to owe a lot in its design to Marvel Comics character Venom.
Mm.
So this is obviously a lot, tied into the lore, one assumes, that the Zato 1 designation is coming back. Obviously, Guilty Gear lore is like a whole thing. There are like books and anime, and
yeah,
the story mode, in fact, is like this huge, big event for these games. So, you know, Eddie is coming back with the Zato 1 designation. What this means for how he plays or his moveset is yet unknown, but a lot of, you know, on the sort of move list that was released, with association of this announcement, there are actually new named moves on this moveset. So we're not quite sure what that means, but if you're an Eddie player, expect some changes.
Yeah. Arc System Works will be doing a location test from December 6th through the 9th. So if you
we'll have some information soon then.
Yeah. And I just have to say, you know, there's a screenshot here on Silicon Era. This game looks so gorgeous. I can't wait.
Yeah, the game looks effing beautiful.
And when news of Eddie returning broke, there was also a sneak peek at a mystery character. That character has now been revealed as Bedman. He is a character who fights well in a giant bed. So,
yeah, this is all right. Arc System Works at their craziest. Like, I remember when the character art for Abba first hit, and, you know, she uses a giant undead key to attack. And a lot of people are like, man, Arc System Works is off their damn rocker. Well, now we have a character strapped to a hospital bed with a giant head on it and crazy chain hands coming out of the sides of it. So, this is gonna get a little weird.
All right. And our last follow-up, which is another fighting follow-up, is that Persona 4 The Ultimax Suplex Hold will be coming to PS3 next summer. This, of course, is coming to arcade this winter and is a follow-up to Persona 4 Arena. And with that, it's time to move on to
News. Oh my god, news.
On Sunday, we got a bunch of Persona news.
We sure did.
The first thing I want to talk about is Persona 4 Dancing All Night. This is a rhythm game that's being developed in collaboration with Dingo, who you probably know from the Hatsune Miku Project Diva series.
Yeah, and you know, to me, the most interesting thing about this announcement, and we'll get to what all was announced in a moment, but, you know, there were four Persona announcements made via this stream. The first, of course, was the home port that we just discussed for the Ultimax Arena, whatever.
Ultimax Suplex Hold.
Okay. And, you know, we have Dancing All Night here that we're talking about now. And we'll talk about the other two in a moment. But the thing that was really most interesting to me about Dancing All Night is that it was very clearly to me a project that started after the Sega acquisition of Atlus.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because, you know, it's being done by Dingo, whom has worked very closely with Sega for years, working on these Hatsune Miku games. And of the games shown, to me, it was the one with the least... Of the three games they showed that had gameplay, it was the one with the least refined... I don't want to say least refined graphics, but it didn't look like an entire game experience. Like, we saw UI elements in the other games. We saw gameplay in the other games. This we saw what was effectively just like Hatsune Miku with a different skin.
Yeah, but I am still
down. Oh heavens, please don't misinterpret that as anything other than pure excitement. This is a Hatsune Miku game, which obviously I'm already here for, styled as a Persona game with music and new remixes and covers by famous Japanese pop and J-rock stars of Persona songs.
Yeah, I want to be dancing all night as Risei-chan to a lesbians, which is not actually the lyrics, but if you're a Persona fan, you probably know what I'm talking about.
So no, I think it's super exciting. I simply meant from an academic standpoint. Interesting that I feel Sega is already leveraging sort of these new intellectual properties to sort of make this investment work for them.
Yeah. The first big news that a lot of people were talking about this week, aside from the biggest announcements we'll get to in a minute, is Persona Q Shadow of the Labyrinth. This is going to be directed by Daisuke Kaneda-san of the Etrian Odyssey series. It will star Persona 3 and Persona 4's characters. And you can play as either the Seas crew or the investigation team. And it will kind of change dialogue and events based on who you play as. So that looks really cool. I know a lot of people are excited to see that kind of Etrian Odyssey-style gameplay applied to a Persona.
Well, and something that's really interesting about that is that while the Etrian Odyssey team, so to speak, is responsible for the gameplay aspect, the setting, the scenario, the character designs, the music are all being done by their traditional Persona team members. So this is going to still be a proper Persona game. You know, early leaks had had this game pegged as Persona 4-2. And by all indications so far, it does appear to take place after Persona 4 Arena, which is where the Persona 3 and Persona 4 teams initially crossed over.
That's exciting. I mean, both are great Persona games, so, and this, I know a lot of people who are really excited about this.
Yeah, I'm definitely one of them. I cannot wait. I have to say, I've seen some amount of, trepidation and speculation and pessimism about the status of these Persona games coming over to the U.S. I have to say, aside maybe Dancin' All Night, and even Dancin' All Night I think is likely, to me these games are all a shoo-in to come to the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Persona is a huge brand here. I would say it's as popular here as it is in Japan. I mean, they do pretty huge numbers here, considering their budget and sort of their traditional expectation of sales.
Right.
And with Dancin' All Night, you know, you also have to look at Hatsune Miku. While it got a limited print run in the U.S., it was still very successful within that print run. It sold it out very quickly. So I do think there would be motivation on Sega / Atlas's part to get more of that kind of content out here.
Indeed. Now, the biggest announcement for pretty much everyone from Sunday was that Persona 5 was officially announced for PS3 in winter 2014. And it's going to be directed by Katsura Hashino-san, who, you know, was responsible for Shin Megami Tensei Nocturne, Persona 3, Persona 4, and Catherine. At first, all we got was a teaser trailer that said, "You are a slave. Want emancipation?" Since then, a few more details have emerged about how the characters will be restrained by modern society. So
yeah, Dengeki PlayStation Magazine has been running articles on this since the announcement.
And there's, like, you know, a lot of the imagery being used has, like, been ball and chain, in that there's going to be a theme of overcoming trials to free yourself from your shackles and, like, a lot of catharsis. So sounds very Persona-ish.
I think we're going to see a lot of themes that Persona 4 touched on, revisited and expanded upon.
Right. It's still going to take place in a school setting as per the Persona method, I guess you could say. But, you know, they're aiming to make it have a range of moods and emotions throughout the game. So, I mean, I'm very excited. You know, these Persona games typically come out late in the lifespan of the consoles, and I'm sure that this is going to look great.
I'm going to tell you, based on the blurb, that the characters of Persona 5 will be living hard lives of modern-day society, where each one of them will be restrained by something in their lives. I'm really hoping that they're going to go whole hog and have an actual closeted gay character.
I hope so. Because, you know, a lot of people take issue with the way that Kanji-kun was portrayed.
Yeah, and, you know, while I appreciate the ambiguity of that storyline, because, you know, as we've discussed here on Game Buoy with some of our listeners, you know, while I took it that Kanji sort of was gay and sort of found an equilibrium within himself of what he should, how he should act or what have you, we had listeners who didn't feel that way at all and had completely different
reads on the material. A lot of people thought it was just more of a gender thing than a, you know,
yeah,
gender roles thing than a sexuality thing. Although definitely as a gay man got that. And then Naoto as well, you know.
So. Oh, I actually find Naoto to be fairly problematic with the way that character's story resolves.
Right, right.
Whereas with Kanji, I feel like a lot of the symbolism used in imagery, to me, indicates not just a gender issue, but a sexual preference issue. Some of the muscle men with roses and what
right, have you. Right,
right. Stuff that typically in Japanese media indicates, you know, homosexuality.
Right, right, hard gay, yeah.
Exactly so, you know, the whole bada roses and everything.
Exactly. We might have to do a Persona Buoy episode.
I feel like this, that would be a, something that we probably should have done like a year ago, so.
Well, I mean, considering that we probably need to do a Shin Megami Tensei episode, we probably also need to do just a Persona episode, too. Look forward to it, maybe.
Please look forward to it. You know what? I'm going to say right now, we're on air. Let's do a Persona episode. Let's aim for maybe March.
Okay.
All right.
All right. One last piece of news from Atlus, which is not specifically Persona news, but
I'm seeing two Atlus news articles here on your show roll.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true.
Go on, go on.
Index has registered a trademark for something called Devilizer. And the reason that I'm not putting this as a rumor has it is that, you know, they registered the trademark, but they, you know, there's no rumors out there about what it is. Of course, Devil in the title makes many think of Shin Megami Tensei, but, you know, facts being facts, there is a trademark registered, so.
Yeah, yeah. For all we know, this could be another spin-off along the style of Devil Kids.
Ah! You mean Demi Kids?
I meant Devil Kids, but okay.
Which we'll be talking about tomorrow.
All right.
And, yes, there is one more piece of exciting, potentially exciting Atlus news. Sega Sammy's COO, Naoya Tsurumi, who, of course, is now president of Index Corporation, has talked about how Sega has given Atlus permission to use any dormant Sega IP. This is, of course, very exciting because there are things like Sakura Wars, Jet Set Radio, Space Channel 5, among many, many others. Trying to think, there were a couple of other ones that people online were excited about. So, I mean, those of you who are fans of some of these Sega IP that have kind of just fallen to the wayside, this is potentially very exciting.
I tell you, man, I would give anything for a Devil Survivor Sakura Taisen crossover.
That would be probably pretty tits.
Yeah, right? Like, demons are coming through the cracks of reality. Let's use our super-powered smartphones and steam-powered mecha to attack them on a tactical grid.
Ah, yes.
And maybe date and do social links between that.
Yes.
Since Sakura Taisen also had a social link system, basically. It would be perfect. Hire me, Sega.
In a little bit of fun news, a Doctor Who game is available on iOS and Android called Doctor Who Legacy. It came out to kind of coincide with the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who, and lets you play as your favorite companions and allies from the series history.
I'm just like, oh shit, girl, where's my phone? I need to download this right now.
And you can battle some of the most famous enemies, like the Daleks! So, you know, we don't usually talk about Doctor Who on air, but we're pretty big Doctor Who fans. And so, you know, this seems like something that would be really cute. It's free to play. You know, I've heard that some of those British-only releases of the Doctor games are kind of very mediocre, but for a free to play mobile game, this definitely seems worth checking out.
Yeah, and there's a screen cap here from Asylum of the Daleks.
Asylum of the Daleks!
And that was, like, my favorite Series 7 episode, so I'm pretty excited.
Right? Run, you clever boy. You might remember that Nintendo partnered with the Louvre, of course, the museum in Paris, and in the form of using your 3DS as a kind of audio tour. And because many of us probably aren't able to go to the Louvre...
You're not able to go to the Louvre?
Ah! No, trust me, I'm able to do that. there was a Nintendo Louvre Direct.
Okay, just so that we're clear here, and I hate to interrupt you, I'm sorry, Doctor Who Legacy appears to be Puzzle and Dragon with Doctor Who elements.
Really?
Yeah, I swear to effing God.
I need to download that right now. So anyways, that is going to be coming out in an enhanced version of that guide, which lets you do like a little virtual tour of the Louvre. And it'll be available on December 2nd out here in North America for $20. And Europeans can get it right now. So that's really neat. And, you know, kind of a special little thing that I don't know if anyone but Nintendo would do. So,
Yeah, it's a little strange, but, you know, you look at, you know, there's going to be 400 3D photos and 300 hours of audio commentary. And, you know, like you're saying, it's just, this is going to be really special for some of us who maybe wouldn't have the means to go visit the actual museum. We could, you know, download this app and see at least certainly more of these things in greater detail than previously would have been possible. It just sounds really, really special to me.
Indeed. Something else that sounds very special is the next game from Team Meat, who is, of course, the developer behind Super Meat Boy. The game is called Mugenics, and it will involve pushing two cats together to create a new one. It involves cat genetics and the forced evolution of the most adaptive species on this whole planet, according to Team Meat's Edmund McMillan.
They have previously referred to Mugenics as a cat lady sim that blends elements of The Sims and Pokemon with a sprinkling of Animal Crossing and a dash of Tamagotchi.
Yeah. And it also likened Mugenics to Cabbage, which is an unreleased Nintendo game that was in development by Shigesato Itoi and Miyamoto-san, which was, you know, Earthbound, so... It was going to be a 64DD game. It was going to be a breeding game that let you compatible. It was
you could breed at home and then seed on your Game Boy systems on the go.
Indeed. So look forward to Mugenics for Steam, iOS, and Android in 2014. I can't help that, like, over on Joystick, which is where I got this news from, they made a cute little webcomic. And this sounds like everything I want. I really liked Super Meat Boy a lot. I thought it was a really clever, platformer. Did some really neat things. So I have full faith that Mugenics is going to be just great. It's going to be perfect.
Well done.
Like a cat's birthday.
What?
It's a 30 Rock joke.
Oh, okay.
Some of you might have heard about this. Crimson Dragon was not getting great reviews, and so, the developers, Grounding Incorporated, decided to rebalance the game before the game came out.
This is interesting to me, you know, because Crimson Dragon's director, Yukio Futatsugi, is, you know, I'm a big fan of his work. The Panzer Dragoon games,
right,
of course. Phantom Dust, one of my secret favorite games of all time. He makes hard games. He likes games to be challenging. He typically makes them as such. It's probably part of why I'm typically on his side. But I think it's very interesting to see him sort of concede that based on feedback, they decided that they needed to sort of loosen the game up before it was even properly released. So I'm really interested in seeing, sort of how these changes have impacted the game. And, you know, I haven't played Crimson Dragon yet. I haven't really spent much time with the Xbox. Wait, it is Xbox. I haven't spent much time with the Xbox One yet. I haven't bought one myself yet, so I've only seen other people's. But I feel like I don't know anyone who has Crimson Dragon. So if we have any listeners who picked this game up, could you please tweet us at gamebuoy.org?
Gamebuoy.org, with the .org spelled D-O-T-O-R-G.
Yeah, the .org is spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G. And let us know what you think about it. I'm really sort of champing at the bit to find out a little more about this game. I know that a lot of the, again, pre-release reviews were negative, but the game's supposedly been changed a lot since then, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting that, in, you know, this day and age, that that can be done before a game's release and, you know, maybe avoid a Superman 64 from happening. Nothing could have prevented, Superman... I can't even talk about it because Superman 64...
I was going to say exactly that. Like, I think Superman 64 was irredeemable.
Yeah.
But not based on the comic irredeemable. That's something else.
Speaking of Yukio Futatsugi-san and Phantom Dust, Microsoft is talking about how they've partnered with some Japanese developers and are going to be announcing some games with Japanese partners in 2014. They've specifically been talking about their relationship with Futatsugi-san. And Phil Spencer, who is a...
Microsoft Studios corporate VP.
Yeah. Specifically mentioned Phantom Dust as a property that they'd like to potentially reboot. So
yes,
that would be
yes, all over my face.
Captain Spike's over here like, yes, Gaga, yes.
Yeah, except less gay, despite talking about all over my face.
And up next is the segment of the news that I like to call Final Fantasy XIV Realm Reborn buoy.
That's a big buoy.
Hey. These news items are centered around the release of patch 2.1, which is dated for December 17th. So that's really exciting. Some of the things that are to look forward to are costumes and minions, but one big thing that I think a lot of people are going to be excited about is player housing. What you're going to be able to do is that your free company will be able to purchase a plot of land, and then you can, get a house permit from your free company to build a house.
Oh, cute.
Yeah, so it's cool to see, you know, World of Warcraft's new expansion is going to kind of dabble in player housing, but they don't really want to jump in. 14's like, nope, we figured it out. Here's how it's going to be.
And can I just say, man, I'm sure that we'll talk about this in December, but to me, Realm Reborn's surprising success is one of the real, like, success and surprise stories of 2013
yeah,
in gaming.
I agree.
I feel like somehow, against all odds, they really turned it around. And now they're not just turning in like a serviceable game, but they're going after features in a really proactive way that I think even like the big titans of the industry, like, you know, WoW is obviously the easy one to call to. Like, WoW hasn't even gotten to this point yet, and it sounds like Final Fantasy XIV has a good game plan on how to do it.
Indeed. So there is a new DLC case available for Ace Attorney Dual Destinies, and it is kind of crazy. It's called Turnabout Reclaimed, and you should just go over to Silicon Era and watch this, because there's, lady pirates with mustaches, killer whales with mustaches.
That's a lot of mustaches.
It looks really, really wacky, so go check it out. And hey, have you heard? You're just the kind of man I thought. Pirates are great. Speaking of pirates, there are some more naval battles available for Assassin's Creed on December 5th, but not in the way that you're thinking of. This is Assassin's Creed Pirates for iOS and Android on December 5th. It's boats, 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 lots of boats. Kotaku nicknamed it Assassin's Creed All the Boats. So if you really are into boats and pirates, I mean, it actually, for an iOS game, you know, looks kind of pretty.
Yeah, I, you know, I'm really excited about this because I really actually find myself enjoying the ship battles in Assassin's Creed 5. Assassin's Creed 4. So I'm really excited to play this.
That's great. It's funny, the comment section in Kotaku mostly devolved in people talking about Sid Meier's Pirates. So, they're like, are you listening for Axis? Hey! CyberConnect 2 has announced that they have plans for a new .hack game. That's pretty cool. I can't remember. I don't follow the series super closely, but can't remember what the last one was.
You know, it's been In a way, it's been a long time, but there was just last year Guilty Dragon, which was an iPhone and Android game that had characters crossing over between that and the .hack universe. Although we don't really know, in terms of story yet, how Guilty Dragon and .hack connect.
Right, right. So all that Hiroshi Matsuyama-san said is really that, you know, that they're working on plans for a new .hack. So those of you who are .hackers have something to look forward to. There is an indie RPG called Valdis Story Abyssal City that maybe you've heard of.
I've actually downloaded this game since then, yeah.
It got greenlit on Steam, and it's kind of a Metroidvania sort of side-scrolling RPG. Well, maybe not necessarily Metroidvania, but Castlevania, definitely. So, you know, I haven't played it yet, but I see it looks like a pirate ship. So that's kind of up my alley. There's, like, skill trees and everything, so...
Yeah, it's cool. It, you know, it reminds me a lot of almost, like, a faster-paced Metroidvania-style, like, Maple Story, almost.
Oh, cute!
I mean, it's not online, but in terms of just how the sprites all animate and how movement works and map navigation. But it's pretty cool. I like it. I definitely expect that I'll play all the way through it.
Excellent. There is a mobile game that is out that is the product of a wonderful pairing. It's the art director from Mother 3... Nobuhiro Imagawa-san.
And Yoko Shimomura-san, whom you may be familiar with from her musical contributions to the Kingdom Hearts series, the Mario RPG series,
and so many,
Street
many
Fighter
more.
2.
Yeah.
We've talked about Shimomura-san many, many times on Game Buoy. She's one of my absolute favorites. And I am just waiting for this game, The Knight and the Dragon, a pixel art fantasy game.
So cute.
I'm just waiting for an English version, because I want to play this so bad.
Right. It's currently only available it's a free game with microtransactions. It's only available for Android devices, but there will be an iOS version coming in the near future.
And even then, that's only in Japan.
Right.
But I'm hoping it will come to both device types, families, branches,
whatever.
In the US.
Sega has a demon collecting smartphone RPG called Demon Tribe. It kind of looks like it's inspired by Shin Megami Tensei. It is by Masayoshi Kikuchi, who is responsible for some of the Panzer Dragoon games, Yakuza, Jet Grind Radio. So a name that you might be familiar with if you're a Sega fan. It looks pretty cute. So, you know, it's another free game with in-app purchases, but, you know, I think that's really a good way to, you know, kind of try out some new ideas and such. Speaking of Sega, Yu Suzuki-san will be holding a postmortem for Shenmue at the 2014 GDC, Game Developers Conference. So that sounds great.
Yeah, the session's going to be an hour long, so...
So, you know, about the third of the length of a Game Buoy episode.
And, you know, something here, and I don't want to cause rumors or start gossip, but I think it really needs to be called out extra that Mark Cerny, the lead system architect for the PlayStation 4, he also worked on the Vita to some degree. He's sort of Sony's, like, big man in charge with the media right now. Obviously, if you follow... sort of gaming news at all, you probably have some idea of who Mark Cerny is in 2013. He himself is going to be translating this postmortem live at GDC.
Awesome.
So it's, you know, it's awesome, and it also, to some people, raises some questions, because we know that Sony has talked in recent months about how they are looking at what franchises they can help third parties bring back.
Indeed.
And again, I don't want to feed into that, but there's a lot of wishful thinking going on right now, and I am certainly partaking myself.
Indeed. Well, we've got some very exciting news to share from the GamerX team and GamerConnect team. Some of the members from the successful LGBTQ and Ally convention have formed Midboss Games. And, you know, since I know some of these guys, I know that they've been working at this for a while, but a few weeks ago they officially announced the formation of Midboss Games and their Kickstarter campaign for Read Only Memories, which is a new cyberpunk adventure set in the town of Neo San Francisco in 2064. The thing that we are really excited about is that this is very, very largely an homage to Snatcher, which is, of course, the Kojima-san game that Captain Spike loved growing up. So, you know, really cool to see, you know, not only an homage to adventure games, which, you know, kind of, aside from Telltale, you just don't really see much anymore.
Yeah.
Well, R.I.P. LucasArts, but, you know, it's particularly focusing on, you know, Snatcher, so... you can go check them out on Kickstarter, and they're also on Steam Greenlight. You know, we really dig what these guys do, and there are going to be some queer characters, but, you know, they've really tried to make it clear that they just really want to focus on making a really cool adventure game, you know, in the style of Snatcher or Police Knots.
Well, it does. It looks like one of the classic Japanese visual novels, Police Knots, Snatcher, you know, those are the easy ones. And of course, I look at the trailer that they have, and I look at the options they have available, and I just look at the way that the dialogue trees or what have you appear to be. This looks freaking awesome. It has this whole, like, really awesome, like, retro 80s, like, use of color scheme and everything. Like, I just like this whole, like, neo future. Is retro future maybe? IDK, I don't know what the normal term for that kind of cyberpunk is.
Yeah, it's my type of jam, though.
But it is, yeah, I am effing here for it. I love it. I love the character designs. I love the art.
I love that it uses the little GamerX bots. I always wanted to see them. I thought they would be in kind of like a Mega Man-style game, but, I mean, this is even better because, you know, we see a lot of Mega Man clones. And, you know, Mighty No. 9 is coming out, so...
Well, hey, if becoming a robotic assistant was good enough for Metal Gear, it's good enough for...
Turing.
Turing's
my favorite mom.
Is he named after Turing?
Yes. Conway and Turing, the Gamer X mascots. And then there was Spirit, who was the trans community bot representative.
That's awesome!
Yeah.
Awesome!
Yeah, so, as I said... There are going to be queer characters, but, you know, Midboss has really wanted to, you know, kind of emphasize that they're not trying to make a gay game. They just want to make a game where, you know, queer characters are represented, and that, you know, the focus of the game isn't on, oh, there's these queer characters, it's that or there's a evil corporation, kind of, you know, as typical in a cyberpunk story. So, you know, they're going to be... They have teamed up with the Ouya Free to Games Fund, so please go support them if that's the type of game you're into. You know, it's only like a $6 pledge to get the game, and I really want to see this get made because it looks really, really cool. You know, we're all about what those guys do, guys and gals, and they and
those folk.
Good way of summing them up. All right. In other queer news, Handsome Women Productions is going to be releasing Ultimate Gay Fighter. And this has characters such as Bardwell the Leatherman, Bardwell the Leather Bear, Devin Devastation, and drag queen Carrie Cupcake. And the thing that's, of course, really clever about this is that it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek look at the, you know, stereotypes of the LGBT community combined with the stereotypes of fighting game characters.
And, you know, it's funny because I've seen a lot of outcry in the gaming community and the gay community, so I guess I mean the gaming community, about how this reinforces stereotypes and this, you know, is not helpful, it's not good, it's perpetuating, it's exploiting. But I have to say, I find it somewhat questionable that I've never heard any of these same people complain about Dalshim carrying a skull around his neck. I've never heard of any of these people complaining about Ken and Ryu, respectively, being a blonde-haired movie star with a supermodel girlfriend or a Japanese man of honor who lives only to fight.
Guile being a army dude, muscle man with an American flag.
Zangief being a hairy Russian bear wrestler. No, like, the fighting games as an institution have always exploited stereotypes and leveraged these things as, like, a shortcut for if not character development, then character identity. And I'm not saying that it's okay, but if you have a problem with Ultimate Gay Fighter based on its use of stereotypes, then hopefully you have a problem with all fighting game characters ever, basically, or else you're being, to me, a little bit of a hypocrite.
Right.
I think that this is a really interesting way to call to attention that a lot of these fighting game characters are somewhat problematic. But at the same time, I appreciate, since there isn't a lot of room for story in a fighting game, that, you know, there actually maybe, and, you know, this is sort of, I guess, a whole talking point and discussion, frankly, maybe there is an acceptable reason to use and leverage these stereotypes for the sake of creating right. characters that players can identify with. In which case, to me, it also becomes somewhat acceptable to leverage these same stereotypes in a game like Ultimate Gay Fighter, so long as they don't cross, to me at least, the offensive borderline.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of as per the silly excuses for, you know, Street Fighter competitions to happen and such, the press release says this: the first annual gay fight competition was held in 2007 to find America's most ruthless LGBT fighter. The victor was Muscle Queen porn star Josh Max, but only 3 days after his title was won, he vanished. Now 10 new fighters are competing to win the title of gay fight champion. Little do the fighters know, there is something very ominous about the competition itself. The League of Oppressive Self-Righteous Zealots have created the tournament
for two reasons. That's L-O-S-R-Z, which obviously you would read out as losers.
Have created the tournament for two reasons. Make the LGBT community destroy itself and brainwash the winner to carry out the League's nefarious plans.
And if you think, by the way, that that sounds ridiculous, let's just keep in mind that the later King of Fighters games seriously are against a nefarious corporation called Wares that pirates SNK's software until SNK has to close. It's so, like, no, this is fighting games. They have silly, stupid stories. I'm interested in hearing if any of our listeners out there violently disagree with us, or respectfully disagree, hopefully respectfully.
Non-violently.
Please reach out to us. I'd love to hear more from you. Yeah. You can email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Oh, you really went for that. Also, you know, obviously Twitter is an easy way to communicate. And you can tweet us at gamebuoy.org. The .org is spelled out, D-O-T-O-R-G.
At gamebuoy.org, the .org is spelled out, D-O-T-O-R-G.
And if you just want to call me out as an individual, you can tweet at me at SpikePoint.
And I'm at Slagkick. I just want to quickly talk about some of these characters. Well, not talk about them, but there is Sappho Etheridge, the lady lover.
I shouldn't laugh.
There is Ford Jacobs, the fashionista.
Okay.
Go-Go Gary, the go-go boy.
Hey.
He says, yes, ma'am. I'm watching the trailer. Shorty Killa, the homo thug. There is Timmy Spears, the twink. Fierce, and he's shooting rainbows. Gaytality, Jacqueline Daniels, the bisexual. So she's looking super fierce. Bardwell, the bear, as we mentioned. Emo Elmo, the hipster. K-O-Ho, Gaytality. Devin Devastator, the voguer. We also mentioned.
You've been read.
Carrie Cupcake, the drag queen.
Oh my gosh, and it looks like you.
Ah! Gaytality. So, I think it looks really silly and clever, and I find it inoffensive and not, you know, I think because it has something to say and it's not just trying to make fun, I think it's very worthwhile.
You know, and that's I think where I fall on this. I don't think that the caricature is offensive, and so I look at it the same way I look at other fighting games. Like, okay, that's probably a little distasteful, but, you know, I appreciate that within the constraint of this genre of game, you know, you sort of have to leverage your character designs to communicate a whole lot in a, you know, short period, and I think the best way to do that is with established iconography, so.
Yeah. So, the next couple items that we're going to talk about are some kind of problematic things that have happened in the past couple of weeks. The first one I want to talk about is that it developed from a Rock Paper Shotgun interview that the site had done with Dustin Browder from Blizzard, who is the director of Heroes of the Storm, which is, of course, the MOBA game that includes Blizzard All-Stars. I think it was called Blizzard All-Stars before that, and
yeah,
Blizzard Dota before that. So, you know, we've been following this for a while. With that interview with Rock Paper Shotgun, you know, they had asked about the female character design, which is something that, you know, Blizzard gets criticized on a lot. And, you know, this guy said, "We're not sending a message to anybody. We're making characters who look cool," and that, you know, that some of the characters have already been kind of sexualized before Heroes of the Storm. He's like, you know, Kerrigan's wearing heels, right? And he said, you know, "We're not running for president. We're not trying to send a message out. That's not what our game's trying to be about." And in light of that, he has issued an apology for the comments, and, you know, that, you know, they don't want to give the impression that Blizzard isn't sensitive about the portrayal of their characters, but, you know, just kind of the, once again, another example of how things can be problematic when talking about female portrayal in games. Some Xbox gamers have been suspended temporarily for cursing, and the funniest thing for this is actually over on CNN where I saw this first. So,
yeah.
It's interesting that this was picked up by the mainstream media before I really saw it on any gaming
stuff. Well, I think it's a big deal because I think a lot of people when using, especially even like Skype, for example, because this has also occurred supposedly to people communicating on Skype, is... I'm sorry, continue.
So, you know, people have been finding their accounts temporarily banned for swearing, and the... the message that you're getting after you're getting banned is very grammatically incorrect. It says, "Choose something else to play. Because of your past behavior, you can't Xbox Live Gold. It's required to use Skype for Xbox One." So it's just this kind of interesting and kind of, you know, concerning because some people are like, "Are my Skype calls being monitored?" And then, you know... This CNN article also says, you know, in Dead Rising 3, that the words "fuck, shit, and asshole" can be heard in the dialogue. You can go to a XXX supply shop and buy an adult toy that can be turned into a super massager, a weapon that can be used on zombies. So I guess Dead Rising 3 still does have some of that humor.
Yeah. Well, I just think it's interesting here. You know, initially, Microsoft had said, you know, just that this was stuff uploaded on their Upload Studio for sharing. But this has happened to people in the gaming community just in Skype, as, you know, you mentioned some people were worried about their monitoring. But to me, the bigger, more problematic issue here is, again, if I'm talking to a buddy who is 18, like, I don't really see any reason why we shouldn't be able to curse over, I say 18 like I'm talking to some, like, 18-year-old hot gay dudes. But no, like, if I'm talking to a buddy who is of legal age to be cursing or whatever, like...
You want to be like, "Oh, fuck."
Yeah, dude, I curse up a storm when I game.
Yeah, you should have heard Captain Spike playing A Link Between Worlds earlier. He was like, "Oh, fuck balls, tit shit, cock."
I believe the phrase I used was, "Cock dicks, shit nugget, titty fucker."
All right, then.
But no, I do. I curse a lot when I game, when I get very frustrated. And if I'm playing a game online with my bros, and I'm getting banned for cursing while playing with people whom are all, you know, I'm not going to be uploading footage of me onto the internet cursing, probably. Except this podcast, I guess. But, like, I'm not going to be up on Twitch, like, uploading my stream of Dead Rising 3 where I'm cursing up a storm, like, y'all need to not just mind your own business. Like, I'm not gonna be...
Yeah.
It's hard to articulate what I'm trying to say other than keep your damn nose out of it. All of my buddies know how I curse and they're not gonna have a problem with it. So why the hell do you?
Well, speaking of Twitch, all y'all in Radioland might have heard about this PS4 Playroom scandal. Playroom is, of course, the kind of augmented reality game, so to speak, where you can have these cute little robots dancing around in your living room. There was a couple that was streaming a kind of, like, they were making like a show, a call-in show, a husband and wife couple. And so, you know, which is kind of an interesting way to, you know, adapt that technology. But they apparently, I didn't watch this, but apparently they were drunk on air. And then the woman was nude. And some people were saying that they were having sex
One thing that happened that was really bad, did you mention that this woman, I guess, like, got blackout drunk and her husband undressed her?
See, the only blackout I had heard of was the blackout in the broadcast.
They even talk about it in this article. In another, a husband and wife appeared to drink themselves into a stupor. Okay, they don't mention it here. When they say drunk herself into a stupor, I mean she was non-responsive. I did not watch the video because it is abhorrent, but I saw people are effing gifing this online. Like, if you're into gifing this, I don't mean to be rude to you. But, dude, like, get a fucking better hobby or something. Like, I guess that, like, she was, like, non-responsive and he was, like, making jokes about it. And then the stream blacked out for a few minutes. And when it came back on, he had, like, stripped her and she was naked, still passed out. Like, Jesus.
And apparently they were fucking.
Ugh. Like, just, I'm sorry. This leaves a really bad taste in my mouth. This is why we can't have nice things. I'm sure there's an audience for this on Pornhub or XTube or something, but, like, there are people here who are not trying to see sexualized content on their PS4s. Can you not?
Yeah, so, you know, Twitch has responded saying that they're going to continue to moderate their service according to their TOS, and that this was classified as non-gaming content. So, you know, I think it was very easy way for them to kind of, you know, not comment on it while commenting on it. So, yeah, this was kind of problematic. Very, very problematic. And, you know, kind of the type of thing that we're going to run into in this day and age with everything online. You know, we talked about Uno.
Yeah, being Uno, the dick room, basically.
Or the boob room, if you're into that. but, you know, that's kind of, and you know, with this really made me think of the Swapnote scandal too. So it's just, it's kind of, this is something that going forward that, you know, I guess gaming consoles are really going to have to start considering if they're trying to get more into that social media sphere. Now, enough with the problematic problems. We have some hardware-related news to finish off our OMG news segment. An updated Sony policy is going to be allowing you to activate your PSN handle on up to 3 portable devices. So that's really cool, especially if you're someone, you know, who picked up a Vita or, you know, something like that. You know, the Vita TV is also a thing, so... You know, so it's just it's a nice little quality of life change. The PS4 and Vita have been bundled together in an Ultimate Edition, but prior to the launch of it, which was today, I believe, over in England and the other United Kingdom areas, that the impression that was given by Sony is that it would be a boxed bundle. But it's going to be a soft bundle, which means the retailer just kind of, you know, puts a deal together that, you know. So, if you are in the UK and you are looking for a PS4 and a Vita, you know, this might be a good chance to jump in. But, you know, otherwise, it probably won't affect many of you out there. But if you're over in the UK and, you know, you're following this PS4 and Vita bundle, if you're someone who got that bundle, please let us know. We'd be curious to hear... you know, kind of how the different retailers are handling that. Of course, the X-Bone just came out last week, and it sold over a million in its first 24 hours. Of course, this was launched in 13 countries, not just in one region. So, you know, some people are like, oh, it's a little less impressive than the PS4 launch, but still, you know, it's good to see that they're both doing well.
You know, it is. It's good to see that the market seems to be healthy for these console launches. I joke all the time, and, you know, I certainly am somewhat critical of especially Microsoft in this current gen race. But I don't want to see anyone fail. I don't want to see anyone do bad. I think that would be bad for the entire industry.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to see both of these consoles being received warmly.
Yeah, I mean, especially after that South Park episode, two-part episodes.
Don't get me wrong. I still hope that the 3DS family trounces both of them when we get numbers in for November sales, but I'm glad to see they're both doing well. You were going to talk about South Park.
Yes. Wieners, 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 wieners. speaking of the X-Bone, though, you know, you've probably heard about the drive glitch that makes, like, a very ugly, grinding, clicking, terrible sound when you put a game disc in. Or I guess any disc, really. People mostly putting games in, I'm sure. But, Microsoft has admitted that it's a problem. They've got a replacement program in place where they're actually going to, you know, send you out your X-Bone before you have to send yours back to get it to you as soon as possible. So, you know, good on them for kind of, you know, trying to handle this as smoothly as they can.
Yeah, real.
Especially with the Red Ring controversy with the 360 last gen.
This, to me, is the right move. When I have a 360, and it did Red Ring once, and it was a nightmare sending it off and not being able to play Rock Band and stuff for weeks. So this way they're doing it now, where they're sending out the replacement consoles ahead of time, like, to me, this is how you do customer service, Microsoft. This is a way better way to handle this. While I think it's a little bit unacceptable that as you're having as many drive glitch issues as you are, this is the way to get in front of it and lessen that damage and make people who are affected by it feel better. Shipping out new units and giving out a courtesy download game, since your disk drive will still be working in this time. Like, that's the way to do it, and I'm frankly impressed.
Yeah. iBuyPower, who is, if you're in the gaming computer realm and you don't build your own gaming computer, you might be familiar, they kind of have these, like, gaming machines that they make. They've released some images and information about their Steam Machine prototypes. That, you know, these are, of course, the non-Valve Steam machines, but they look pretty good. They look kind of like a white PS4, roughly. And there's two prototypes right now called Gordon and Freeman. They're both going to be available to run Steam games in 1080p at 60 frames per second. So
that's a tall order. Like, I don't think the people that made this spec sheet or whatever, I don't think they understand how games work.
Well, I mean, it also means on what? On high, on ultra, on medium settings?
Well, that's sort of my point here. Like, that's a statement you can make on a console, but on PC, that's not really how graphics work.
Right. Well, this Engadget article was updated with information from The Verge that one of the Steam machines from iBuyPower will have a multi-core AMD CPU, an AMD Radeon R9 270 graphics card, and come with a Valve Steam controller available for $499. So, you know, like, I mean, arguably, depending on how powerful, I'm not familiar with that specific model of Radeon. You know, so it might be a little bit cheaper than a comparable, I mean, because we don't know what CPU it is, how much RAM is in there, so it seems like not a bad price, but, you know, you could probably build an even beefier gaming PC for a little more. But for those of you who maybe aren't comfortable with that, this might be a good option. You know, it looks like it's going to be, some of them are going to be competitively priced with the current gen consoles. So, good to hear. Ouya has a new system update called Abominable Snowman. It is going to add the capability for external storage and a big overhaul to the UI. Will be easier to browse content. A new system menu will let you do things more easily, basically. So, those of you who were Ouya adopters, you know, this will hopefully make your Ouya experience smoother. And, you know, if you're an Ouya person, let us know how you like Abominable Snowman.
Yeah, I have to say I'm really excited about this. Especially for the USB drive storage. I think that's gonna really help.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since, like, the Ouya only had, what, like, 8 gigs onboard memory?
I think so, yeah.
And it got to be a bit of a bear when, if you, like me, download a lot of content. So, this is definitely good news, I'd say.
Indeed we do. We're gonna finish off with some 3DS 2DS bundles that are now available and soon available. Yesterday, a Cobalt Blue 3DS, you know, not XL, was released with a pre-installed copy of Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon for $170. And in addition to that, we have seen news that on December 1st, so probably by the time you hear this episode, a 3DS XL special edition with Dream Team pre-installed will be on it. It's kind of looks like, from what I can see in this circular, looks like a silver XL with Mario and Luigi outlines in gold. I mean, it's cute, but, you know, doesn't hold a candle to the Triforce one, in my opinion. But, you know, another great option in the ever-expanding world of 3DS special editions. And, last but certainly not least, in the spirit of our episode topic this week, there are going to be some Pokemon X and Y 2DS bundles. Right now, these are confirmed by, confirmed for Korea and in European stores. So, you know, we kind of predicted that this was going to happen.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm really hoping, because there still hasn't been a 2DS model announced for Japan. But I'm really hoping that this is what hits Japan, because I will absolutely import a Japanese 2DS Pokemon model.
Oh, that seems like a great idea. Then you can import Japanese 3DS games.
Well, that's exactly so. You know, I saw that there was a flash card on the market now to run region-free 3DS games, but I'd really prefer not to go that route. I don't want to support that cottage industry at all. So I would be more comfortable personally with something like this. So fingers crossed for a Japanese one, because at that price, that would be where I'd jump in for sure.
Yeah, indeed.
Jump in on Monster Hunter 4, finally.
Indeed. Thank you for hanging in there while we gave you a very, very hearty Thanksgiving serving of news this week. Since we're going to be talking about our Pokemon discussion in Part B, we're going to move on to...
Rumor has it.
So, you know, I feel like it was months ago that we talked about the discussion of Steel Driver. Sorry, I was going to say...
Diver. It's Diver, not Driver.
I thought I said Diver. Steel
I heard Driver. Either way.
Steel Diver, you know, the submarine game. That was going to be the first free-to-play game. Australian Classification Board has rated a game called Steel Diver Subwars. Maybe I did say Driver, because Steel Diver Subwars. With Nintendo listed as the publisher, so a lot of people think that this is forward movement for that free-to-play Steel Diver.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, I talked about this when word of this first started circulating way earlier in the year. I think that Steel Diver would be a great franchise to grow as a free-to-play, because it's already like a short kind of time attack game, and, you know, you select your different subs that have different stats and attributes. And I think that the game would be really well served with a pay-to-play. With a free-to-play model where you could pay for earlier unlocking of new models of subs and what have you. I think that the kinds of games that are able to make that work without being unfair, I think that's a framework that Steel Diver would already fit into well.
Indeed. In other trademark rumors, I almost said news, but rumors, Square Enix has registered some English trademarks in Japan. Called Luminaries of the Legendary Line and the Seeds of Salvation. Now, this alliteration heavily suggests that these are going to be localization titles for Dragon Quest games. So that's kind of cool. You know, and then Silicon Era kind of speculates what those might be for, including the possibility of Dragon Quest Monsters Terry Wonderland 3D. I don't think that's going to be what one of these is for, but, you know.
And, you know, I do have to say, I would not be surprised at all if either of these was for the Dragon Quest VII 3DS remake.
And that's one of the ones that Silicon Era definitely thought was a possibility.
And, you know, it's been years since I've played Dragon Quest VII, but Seeds of Salvation or Luminaries of the Legendary Line, like, both of those could describe the events of that game depending on how you look at it.
Nice. So there's a rumor that Telltale is developing a Game of Thrones game, or, you know, a Song of Ice and Fire game. And that's about it. You know, IGN's article is, Telltale is developing a Game of Thrones game. Kind of clickbaity, but, you know, Telltale is not officially commenting on it, but, you know, it seems like it could be very likely. It seems like, you know, a perfect opportunity. Telltale, especially with their huge success with The Walking Dead, you know, it seems like a natural fit. And given that the other Game of Thrones games that have been out have not done super well, you know, there was that Game of Thrones RPG that Atlas published that, you know, didn't really review so well. There was Game of Thrones
and
Genesis.
You bought that, right?
I did not buy that. I bought Game of Thrones Genesis, which was the strategy game.
Oh, okay.
You know, those didn't do super well. So, I could see this being a thing, but, you know, Game of Thrones, I guess, you know, part of me wonders if they would have more combat in it than, you know, in a Walking Dead thing. But also, there's a lot of political intrigue and, you know, all of that. So, we'll have to see if this pans out to be true.
You know, I feel like, even without an increased combat, I think that a Game of Thrones game, as long as the story was written by George R. R. Martin, and he's collaborated on the other games for the story purposes as well, so I don't see why it wouldn't. I don't see why it would have to have a strong combat focus. I think that the lore of that world is, I would say, much richer than Walking Dead, or even Fables, which is their current big deal series.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think they could do really interesting storytelling things within that world. And I'd be really interested in seeing it, honestly. I hope that this is real, and I do hope that they don't take it in a weird action-centric direction, because I don't think the property would be well served by that.
Hmm. So, Katsuhiro Harada-san, who is the current Tekken lead, was posting on Twitter about how Masamichi Abe, who is best known as the director of Pikmin and Pikmin 2, and also for his work on Tekken 2, is developing a new IP for Nintendo. So, you know, we're kind of waiting to hear what that's all about. All we have is a Twitter comment, but of course, you know, news outlets ran with it, but we're keeping it as rumor status until we officially hear that Abe-san is, you know, back in action.
And, you know, something that's interesting about this to me is that I feel like we've been hearing for almost, like, years now that, like, Nintendo EAD 2 is, you know, they're supposed to have a new title that we still don't know about that's to be announced. Miyamoto-san has been talking for a while now about how he's been working on a smaller scale new IP. If Abe-san is also working on a new Nintendo IP, that's, to me, that's going to actually be a fairly big deal, because that tells me we're going to have, like, a wave of freshness at some point.
Well, you know, then there's the people who are like, oh, well, look at how The Wonderful 101 performed, so new IP for Nintendo is just worthless at this point, blah, 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 but up yours.
Yeah, up yours. And if you didn't play Wonderful 101, and you're still complaining about Nintendo's lack of innovation and new IP and all that, play Wonderful 101. I think it's an incredible game, and you should give it a try. But not the demo, because the demo does not represent the game well at all.
So, there have been some job postings for EA Canada that refer to a Star Wars team developing a new major next-gen open-world combat action game. And so, this is suggesting that there's a open-world Star Wars game coming from EA that is being developed at EA Canada, either in part or in whole. So, you know, it would... We'll have to see what develops.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to say about that. I guess cool. I feel like we already have a Star Wars open world game. It just happens to be an MMO.
Oops.
I like Old Republic a lot, actually.
Oh, I do too. It's just that game would have done a lot better as just a online multiplayer game instead of an MMO.
I agree, except that I still think it's fine as an MMO. I don't really see the qualitative difference in it being an online MMO.
I just think that since it ended up being free-to-play, that, you know, had they developed it as, you know, just an online multiplayer game in the first place, that they maybe wouldn't have lost so much money.
I still think that that game should have been buy-to-play in the same way as, like, Guild Wars. Like, just, you know, once you've bought your game, you're in, and you have to buy the expansions, but no monthly subscription. To me, that would probably have been the best route for that game to have gone.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, what do I know? These people get paid, you know, way more money than I make to think about these decisions. But when I look at how the community responded, I feel like if they had gone the Guild Wars route, it would have suited them well.
Yeah.
But as for this rumor, an open-world Star Wars game, I guess cool. Like, I don't see the appeal. Star Wars isn't a franchise where I want to be Grand Theft Auto-ing it up.
Yeah.
For me, Star Wars is about the big, epic, sweeping space opera setting and exploration of all of these different factions and worlds. It's not about the individual man on the street. I'ma hijack this speeder and speed it around the streets of Dantooine.
As long as you're not gonna tell me that you care about the politics, the space politics.
I care about them when they're writ large. You know, I certainly think that the original trilogy, and to some degree even the prequel trilogy, if you take a step back and you don't look at, like, trade embargoes, but you look at, like, oh, this is how the Emperor shifted political power into his corner slowly over decades, that's a fairly interesting story within that setting.
Ooh, look who outed herself as a Star Wars geek.
No!
Well, I think that we best move on to
Smash or Trash!
So, Captain Spike, you have a great Smash for us this week. Would you care to talk about it?
Not really. No. This was an article called The Legend of Zelda and the Road Not Taken. It was published on US Gamer, and it was written by Jeremy Parrish. I really felt like this article should be sort of focused on, because I think it's a really good sort of in-depth look at the evolution of, you know, Zelda and how Link Between Worlds sort of came to be and sort of pulled from certain parts of the format that has been established as sort of the set of gameplay basics among the series over the years. And, like, some of these gameplay tenets, it tinkers with and tweaks and inverts in some really interesting ways. And I just thought this was a really interesting read.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I am a huge fan of the series. I haven't had a chance to dive into Link Between Worlds yet, but, you know, I really think that this article really does a superb job at everything that you said, you know, just kind of looking at the evolution of the series. Our trash this week is from Kotaku, and it's called We Didn't Ask for This Persona Music Game. So it's basically, it's talking about Persona 4 Dancing All Night, and it's like, oh, Atlus isn't developing it, but, instead, it's going to be developed by Tokyo-based Dingo, who, and I'm sorry, I usually do not like to, call out these authors of these trashes.
Yeah, I don't mind for the smashes, but for trashes, like, I don't want to ruminate too hard on who's doing bad personally.
But this article was by Brian Ashcraft, who lives in Japan. And, you know, Dingo, of course, as we mentioned earlier, is the developer behind the Project D.Va games, the Hatsune Miku games. And it's really surprising to me that someone who lives over in Japan working for Kotaku would not be familiar with that. So that, you know, just you know, the negative attitude of it. So I thought it was total clickbait, waste of bandwidth. And I have a bonus trash for you over on Kotaku as well, called Let's Learn How to Draw Butts. And it says, we've already talked about drawing penises and drawing boobs. How about the fine art of butt drawing? This has nothing to do with games. It's just showing you a YouTube video of how to draw fantastic butts using only a few lines.
Man, this is nearly as bad as that time that they put up a post talking about a dog that looked like Hitler.
That also did happen and then got taken down. So after watching this video, according to Kotaku, you will become an ass master. I'm not making this up.
Well, I'm already an ass master.
Whoa! I think that means it's time to talk about...
I said, hey, what's going on?
So, I've been returning to an old favorite. I actually resubscribed to World of Warcraft.
Oh, hell no, girl.
You know, it's the 9th anniversary. There is a 9% experience boost. So I thought it was the perfect time to come back. What actually motivated me to come back is that Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, Horde House, both over on the Voice of Geeks Network, VocNetwork.com, he was kind of talking about on Twitter about doing a weekly live stream over on Twitch, rolling a new character. And I thought, you know, that sounds like fun. So I made a character, an orc shaman named Bangers, after the Miley Cyrus album. She's got kind of tufty hair. And so, you know, I initially said, you know, I'll just subscribe to it for a month, you know, do some streaming with Rob and then see where I go. But I've already starting to work on my Death Knight, getting her up to 90, so I'm probably back in it for the long haul. You know, I was excited about Warlords of Draenor, and you are logging into World of Warcraft right now, aren't you, Captain Spike?
You can't prove anything.
I can see it on your screen. You put it on your second desktop on your HDTV. You were trying.
You can't prove anything.
So
keep going.
So yeah, you know, I've been very off and on with Mists of Pandaria. I don't think it's a terrible expansion pack, but you know, just with everything going on in my life lately, I just did not have the time to really put into it. But I think that, you know, I'm starting to find the time where something like WoW is something that I could fit in my life again. So
that's awesome. You know, I'm super happy to hear that. I, as you noted, also resumed WoW. And, you know, some of the most fun multiplayer gaming experiences I've had over the last decade have involved gaming online with you and obviously some of our other friends, but you have definitely been involved in them. I'll never forget the first time we took down the Lich King.
Right,
so
yeah.
So I'm really, really excited that you're back on the train. I still would rather see you in Final Fantasy, because then I would have even more incentive to get back to that, because I still love that game and I still am having a hard time making time for it, especially with everything sort of going on right now. But I'm really excited. I'm really excited about you picking WoW back up.
I'll probably pick up 14 for PS3 at some point. I had wanted to
Excellent.
Do it on sale this week, but yeah. So, Captain Spike, what are you playing? I see that you're playing World of Warcraft right now.
I sure am. This is my orc Death Knight. Her name is Sista Girl.
Ooh, Sista Girl.
Ooh, Sista Girl. And, you know, in addition to that, as you were mentioning earlier, I was playing Link Between Worlds, cursing a lot, because I nearly died.
And I know that Ian from Koopa Club was telling me that you hadn't died at all at the point that he had talked to me, and he said, oh, I've already died twice, but that you hadn't died at all, so...
Yeah, that was the last battle of the game, so I finished it today. I have beat the game, and that was the last battle of the game I nearly died on, and that was the first time I nearly died.
Wow,
I had 4 fairies, and I used, like, 3 of them. So, no other boss had me using fairies like that. One boss did knock a fairy out of me, but in any event... Link Between Worlds, man, I have to say, I talk a lot of shit about Zelda. I think that it is by far the most overrated franchise in gaming. I think Zelda is more overrated than The Last of Us, or Gears of War, or Halo. I think Zelda is worse off than any of them. But, taking each game in a vacuum and looking at just it itself, I think that most Zelda games are incredibly well-made games. And I think that in a lot of ways, Link Between Worlds is, in fact, the best Zelda game. I was endlessly impressed with ways that it toyed with my expectations. It tweaked the established and accepted formulas for how to do things. It told it a different story for the Zelda series, which is also a credit I gave a year or two ago back here on the show to, what was it, Skyward Sword, you may recall. So I was really impressed with Link Between Worlds. And to me, nearly the most impressive thing about it is that it came out the same day as Super Mario 3D World.
Yeah.
Which is another game I'm very nearly done with. I've cleared the main game. I'm several worlds into the extra content. So I've seen probably 90% of what the game has to offer. And it has constantly stunned me. Much in the same way that I think that Zelda Link Between Worlds is the best of all Zelda games when looked at on its own merits. I similarly think that Mario 3D World is probably objectively the best of the Mario games.
Really?
Like, the best of the Mario
games. Better than Galaxy.
I truly think as a game that it's better than Galaxy. I don't know that I like it more than I like Galaxy.
Well, I'm just kind of the Galaxy's special feels for you.
Well, exactly, because you have to look at sort of how new it was at the time and where I was in my life when I first played it. But again, taking a step back and stripping those personal feelings of it away and looking at game design and level design and, even like art and presentation, I think that 3D World is a new high watermark for Nintendo. I think that it is. It really firmly establishes this whole idea of EAD2's, studio at Nintendo being the Pixar of gaming.
Wow.
It is. I couldn't possibly say enough good things about Mario 3D World. It is just incredible,
and
I'm stunned in every way.
I feel like a lot of people are not considering it as the, you know, successor to Galaxy Sunshine 64. They're not considering it a mainline Mario game, but you would say that it definitely is?
Absolutely. Without question. I'm going to be talking about this on air on the Koopa Club podcast as a guest in the next few weeks, as I understand it. Unless they don't want me anymore, which would be fine. But, so I'll keep my thoughts here short so that you can all get funneled over there and listen to their show. And that is, initially I was very disappointed, and I've talked about this here on the air, that, oh, it's cool that they're doing this, but I would have rather had a Galaxy-style game. But I really feel like they took the core tenets of the 3D Marios and mixed them with the 2D Marios, the new Mario series in particular, but even the old classic sprite 2D games that, like, maybe some concepts haven't been seen from in literally 20-odd years.
Well, I mean, even Peach and her physics coming from Mario 2.
Oh, well, that's the easy one, but when you play the game, or, Sidekick, you're going to see it's even
more
than
that. Or
Mama-san
or whatever her name was in Doki Doki Panic.
I came in expecting a watered-down Mario 3D experience, but what I got was the most, how do I say this, the most polished and perfected and well-designed Mario experience overall. Like, of all of the various branches and spin-offs, this to me crystallizes sort of what's special about all of them and pulls it into one package that to me is just, it's a joy to play, and I will be shocked if it doesn't take home quite a few Game of the Year awards this year.
Wow.
I will be shocked.
That's high praise. Well, great. Have you been playing anything else?
You know, those are the two big ones, really.
Oh, we played some Rock Band.
We did. We played Rock Band, and that was super fun.
We played Karaoke Revolution American Idol Encore.
Yeah, and you know, I've been playing some Assassin's Creed 4, but you know, compared, again, the thing is, when I have Mario 3D World and Zelda Link Between Worlds to talk about, all of these other things sort of go out the window because, like, they're good games. There's some incredible games right now, but I really think that these new Zelda and Mario games are some of the best games made of all time.
I think a lot of people
truly
are very quick to brush Nintendo off, but they need to recognize, and I think people do recognize, oh yeah, Nintendo makes great games. They're just easy to talk shit about because I want Brosplosions hot.
Well, yeah, I mean, I like Brosplosions. Maybe not in the way you meant it, but I like that.
Oh, I like those too.
But, you know, it's just, I really think, looking at how well these two games have reviewed, I think it's clear that a surprising amount of games media agrees with me. Even if Jeremy Parrish called Link Between Worlds an ugly game, and I think it's freaking beautiful.
But then he went and talked about how it was great.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that as a game and as the design comes together, I think it's basically above reproach. It's really tremendous what Nintendo managed, I think.
Well, great. So, since I'm hosting this week, you are taking over my usual first mate job of Social Links. So,
oh, God.
Have at it, Captain Spike.
All right. Well, you know, we did an episode last week on the PlayStation 4 launch, and we had asked our lovely listeners out there in Radioland, this week we talked about the PlayStation 4 launch. Do you plan on getting one now? If not, will you ever? We also had a Facebook bonus question. What are you hoping to see from the PS4 a year or two down the line? Any PlayStation legacy franchises you'd like to see come back?
Is that how I'm supposed to read them from now on?
I don't think you're boss enough. So, Game Buoy superfan Crystal D responded on Facebook with, "Have one. It is so beautiful. With the beauty of the graphics, I am hoping to see Burnout, but until that happens, Need for Speed will have to suffice." Which, if you recall, that's actually very similar to what we said on the air about Need for Speed. So we're right there with you, girl. Delvin, also on Facebook, over from the Video Game Realness podcast, had said, "I will get a PS4 for sure when games for it start coming out that I want. These generally would be the games that don't come to Nintendo. PlayStation fills that void for me. As for legacy titles, I would just absolutely love to see a new Legend of Dragoon, a game that did so well and was never touched again. It's time for a comeback." I have to say, Delvin, I agree with you completely. I think there's a lot of Legend of Dragoon fans out there online. I see people talking about this game all the time. Of course, you may recall that the PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale, was that the name of that game?
Yeah.
That had a Dart character made for it before the switchover was made, because, you know, originally Superbot, I think it was, were doing DLC characters for that game, and then they were, how do we say this eloquently, let go and replaced with Sony Santa Monica Studios, who canned all of the planned DLC to make some God of War DLC or something.
Of course.
But they had done work on a Dart Legend of Dragoon character for that. So if nothing else, it sucks that that character was canceled, but it shows that, if nothing else, Legend of Dragoon isn't completely dead. They know that there's a hunger for this content, so I'm going to keep my fingers crossed and join you in hoping. We have Andy, also on Facebook. "With the free-to-play games and free PlayStation Plus games, I've been more than satisfied with my purchase so far. It's also given me impetus to go back and revisit some cross-play games like Sound Shapes."
Oh, great.
"I really hope to see the camera used a little more fully than the eye was. I feel like there's a lot of potential there for some cool innovation. But since it wasn't bundled with the console, it's hard to say how much attention the developers are going to give it. As far as legacy games go, I'm not going to hold my breath, but I'd kill to see a new Resistance game for the PS4. I know Insomniac has washed their hands of the series, but now might be a great time for someone else to pick it up and bring it back in a strong way."
You know, I want to talk about the peripherals thing, and I actually, you know, I mean, not specifically with the eye per se, but, you know, just kind of in general, you know, I really feel like a lot of peripherals just really aren't pushed to their full potential. I mean, maybe Kinect would be arguably the one that, I mean, not even to the full potential, but Kinect is probably the one that we've seen over the years be used, I guess, most consistently, arguably. But, you know, you think of third-party games with Wiimotes, never really innovated in any interesting ways, by and large. PlayStation Move is basically all but forgotten at this point, as far as I know. And, you know, the eye. So, I mean, you know, I would like to see these peripherals that are being introduced, you know, be kind of considered more, and, you know, and I guess that really lies on the third-party developers and the first-party developers to really, you know, kind of show how these preferables can be used, but also for third-party developers to really be thinking outside of the box and taking risks and stuff, which I don't really think we've seen happen all that much, you know, since peripherals have kind of really become a commonplace thing in the gaming climate, so to speak.
And, you know, I want to address your concern about Resistance. You know, there was just a Resistance Vita game released last calendar year. And it was, you know, it wasn't received super well, but it wasn't received awfully either. I don't think that series is dead. I'm gonna join hopes with you. I'm gonna hope that we do see more, traction gained on that front. And, you know, especially since we just got a new Killzone, maybe they're just trying to space these series out since they could potentially be competing for a lot of the same customers. But I have my fingers crossed too, that, cause that's, as far as those kinds of games go, that's one of the few series that I really personally get into. So I definitely agree. Ian, over from the Koopa Club podcast over on Facebook, says, I'll get one when there are better games for it. I realize that it's having a successful launch so far, but the library for it isn't enticing. I know a year from now I will be saying otherwise. I hope Kingdom Hearts 3 gets a release window in the next couple of years, because that's the only game that has me wanting a PS4 as of yet. If there is any franchise I would like to see resurface, it would be a return to the mechanics that made Silent Hill, you know, Silent Hill. I added that you know because I didn't know how else to communicate that, but other than just saying Silent Hill, Silent Hill. I would also love to see a new Fear Effect. I might be the only one in this light, but I loved those games. No, I also loved Fear Effect. We talked about that a little bit in back way back when we did our episode on LGBT issues in gaming, which we are certainly due for a return to.
Yes.
I thought that Fear Effect was a surprisingly pleasant little romp, and the tacked-on lesbian action, while not my cup of tea exactly, I actually thought was really compelling as presented. And as for Silent Hill and the return of classic Silent Hill, I certainly agree with that. And obviously I'm obligated to say, if you've never played Silent Hill Shattered Memories, make time for it now. Grab a Wii and do it.
Grab your Wii.
Whoa, girl. And last, but most certainly not least, Edward over on Facebook says, I'll get one just to finish Kingdom Hearts series, but I just don't see me enjoying it. I think I'm going to end up with rehash pretty third-party games, and maybe The Last Guardian if they don't release it for PS3. What I do hope to see from them 2 years down the line is more new IPs and a game that defines what the PS4 is really about.
I think these concerns are really widespread and valid that everyone's brought up.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I certainly hope that we see Last Guardian finish and release. And, you know, I would, honestly, not to go against you, but I would actually prefer to see them not release it on PS3 and really focus on the individual strengths of the PS4 to really make that game work. I don't want to see a game that is hamstrung by being cross-platform, where they really have to limit themselves in terms of design and visuals and, you know, have to hold the game's vision back. You know, they've been working on it so many years now. You almost have to assume that it's probably gotten too big for its britches. And much like, you know, Final Fantasy Versus /15 before it, sometimes refocusing on a new platform and just dedicating yourself to that platform can ultimately benefit your project.
Yeah.
So I hope we see Last Guardian, and I hope it's awesome. And to me, I would almost like if that was the game that defined what the PS4 was about, was this sort of incredible, hopefully emotional and touching experience.
Mm, yeah. I was going to answer this question of the week, but...
Oh, why don't you?
No, actually, well, the thing is that I'm actually going to hold off until we have our Xbox One episode to kind of comment on the new consoles.
Excellent. All right, well, we also have a response or two over on Twitter, so let me go over there. And here we have one from KTaroE37. When Watch Dogs comes out, I'm getting a PS4, still a few games I want on PS3, and waiting for all of the missing pieces of the operating system.
Yeah.
Let's see. And I think that that's all that I see here from the question of the week about the PlayStation 4. We did have a couple of general feedbacks. We also had a shout-out from the Retrograde podcast.
Yay!
A big thanks to Captain Spike from the GameBuoy podcast for doing the voiceover intro to our new episode.
Aw.
That was an episode about Street Fighter. I'd highly recommend you listen to it. You know how I feel about that series. We also had Dan D., a GameBuoy.org episode under 2 hours. This is, of course, with regard to our PlayStation 4 launch episode. If you need me, I'll be nervously checking through the blinds for the four horsemen and slash or zombies. Jeremy Johnson wanted to point out, angry mommy. Maybe she should buy a new brain. Made me die. Thanks.
Ah, yes.
You're welcome.
Yes.
We had a shout-out from Game Bar, which is ever and always appreciated, because, you know, we definitely support what those guys do. With regard to this week's question of the week, we had a response saying, I'll definitely be writing an email for this episode. Pokemon is one of my favorite franchises. Hopefully he gets that to us before we record tomorrow.
Indeed.
And we also had from Steve Pixel on Twitter, I enjoyed listening to your shit show on my drive today. Man, that sounds not so good, bro.
We understand what you mean, but yeah, Game Buoy can be a shit show in general.
Have you
Especially with me hosting this week.
Have you considered doing an episode on male nudity in games? We hadn't, but now I certainly want to. Sidekick, let's slot it in.
Oh, hey, in your coin slot?
We also had a mention by Alan Alchemy, who is suggesting that Jeremy from the Koopa Club podcast take a picture next to a roll of basic paper towels and be like, oh my god, let's throw GameBuoy.org a pizza party. That is ice cold.
Well, and I'm totally going to shade myself here in the process. Alan, once you've been on a podcast that's not Fabulous Flames, get back to me, honey.
Ah! Man, Fabulous Flames was a mess.
That's because I hosted it.
All right, well, I think that this part of Social Links is done. I apologize. I don't typically do this. It's a little rough around the edges, but if you'd like to take it back. I guess this is me.
This is it,
well,
yeah.
Shit. All right. Please give us your feedback. We live for it. We love your iTunes subscriptions and ratings/reviews.
Please
sub to us and rate us. Let us know how much you love us. Don't let us know how much you hate us. That shit don't help nobody. We could also really, really, really use your likes on Facebook. You can find us on facebook.com. Do we have a /gamebuoy.org?
It's just /gamebuoy.
/GameBuoy. So yeah, that's rad. Facebook/GameBuoy. We fucking love Twitter.
We fucking love Twitter.
You can probably tell. I have probably said the word Twitter like 80 fucking times tonight. You can find us over at GameBuoy.org. The .org is spelled out, D-O-T-O-R-G.
At GameBuoy.org. The .org is spelled out, D-O-T-O-R-G.
You can also find us on Tumblr. What is our Tumblr?
GameBuoy.tumblr.com.
GameBuoy.tumblr.com. You can also find us over on Google Plus.
What's our Google Plus URL, Captain Spike?
It's probably like google/43819876294320842084912345891076589245891012.
How incredible would that be if that was actually the right URL? But actually, as you remember last time, we did get the short URL of GameBuoy.org.
So we're at what exactly?
I don't know what if there's like /#! Crap, but it's plus.google.com/GameBuoy.org should bring you there.
plus.google.com/GameBuoy.org. GameBuoy.org. 404, that's an error.
Well, do you know what the better place would be, Captain Spike? Where should they go if they're not wanting to type all that in?
www.gamebuoy.org.
And you don't even need that www. This is 2013.
GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And, of course, you can email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org. With that, How about you give me some shout-outs, bro?
Well, as ever and always, we'd like to shout-out to Game Bar.
I wanna take it to a Game Bar!
I feel like with us switching places this week, that should have been me, but there's no real equivalent for your shout-outs. The Game Bar is the podcast that fills your brain space with hours of gay video game commentary. They're the gay video game prairie home companion. Nerdgasm Network, the wildest shock jock video game radio show you'll ever come across, is a bag of hot dicks. Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO. And Horde House, the place for all things online gaming but never too seriously, both over on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com. As ever and always, we'd like to shout out to Video Game Outsiders, the podcast about video gaming from the average player's perspective, and the Nerd Podcast, that's Nerd with a G, pop culture rants from a gay nerd's perspective. Spike, take us out.
As ever and always, I'd like to shout out to the boys over at the Koopa Club Podcast, that's Koopa with a Q and Club with a K. They serve up a very similar show to what we do, except they do it a little bit better. Of course, I'd also like to shout out to Video Game Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. VG Realness is an LGBT-focused show, as is Koopa Club, and frankly, as are we. So if you have a problem with that, get the fuck out. I also would like to shout out to Geek Charisma, a podcast that is everything geek with discussions on movies, DVDs, video games, conventions, and comics, as well as Neshoba Talks With You About Games. I haven't seen any new content on Neshoba's feed in a while, but there's no one else doing what he was doing, which was like NPR about games on Off-Broadway. So I'd still recommend you check out his feeds, see what he's doing, and hopefully he'll notice an uptick in hits and get back to some new content. Further, I'd like to shout out to Orange Lounge Radio, OLR for short, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I personally have stolen basically every one of my gimmicks. I also would like to shout out to the Game Over Takeover, your one-stop shop to go to for geekery galore. And last but most certainly not least, the Retrograde Podcast. They focus on retro gaming news, one at a time, and really try to dissect what makes some of these older classics tick. As ever and always, I'd also like to shout out our wonderful theme music, which was done by the Gone But Not Forgotten Zelda Reorchestrated. We will always use music by you guys. We loved what you did, and I hope someday one of you hears this and knows that you were appreciated.
Indeed.
With that having been said, Slagkick, I think it's time
it
for
is.
You to send us out.
Yeah, so thank you so much for tuning in to our very hearty
Thank you.
And like we said, we'll be back tomorrow. So by the time you hear this, it'll probably already be up on our feed. With a very in-depth discussion of the Pokemon franchise. Until then, keep gaming, keep thinking, and Team Rocket, blast off at the speed of light. Surrender now or prepare to fight. Meowth, that's right!
And you're gonna shade me saying Japanese things.
Do you know that next part is the Japanese equivalent? Aphrodite, lady, seashell bikini, garden panty, Venus. I can't help the way I'm feeling. Goddess of love, please take me to your leader. I can't help, I keep on dancing. Goddess of love, take me to your planet. Take me to your planet. Take me to your leader. Your leader, take me to your planet, take me to your planet, take me to your Venus, your Venus. When you touch me, I die, just a little inside.
Wonder if this could be love, this could be love, cause you're out of this world, galaxy, space, and time. I wonder if this could be love.
Venus. Have an oyster, baby, it's
Are you looking at lyrics? You cheater.
At sleazy. Venus. All the lesbians, all the lesbians. So on Sunday, there was a big series of... Oh my god, stop, you just fucked me up.
Well, then you need to learn to be a better host.
Nayoya? 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 Naoya? N-A-O-Y-A.
Naoya?
Naoya Tsurumi.
That's a big buoy.
Hey! Yes!
Yes!
Thank you, that was a lot of fun.